My dear Lord, your lordship alone is the cause and the effect. Therefore, although you appear to be two, you are the absolute one, and as there is no difference between the gold of a golden ornament and the gold in a mine, there is no difference between cause and effect. Both of them are the same. Only because of ignorance do people concoct differences and dualities. You are free from material contamination. And since the entire cosmos is caused by you and cannot exist without you, it's an effect of your transcendental qualities. Thus the conception that Brahman is true and the world false cannot be maintained. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the living entities are representations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's marginal potency, whereas the various bodies accepted by the living entities are products of the material energy. Thus the body is considered material and the soul is considered spiritual. The origin of both, however, is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita 7:4-5, Umarabho umaro vayu kamala buddha iva cha ahankaram iti yamed vina prakritiyas tada aparayam itas tranyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta maha bahu yadedam tarvite chaya. Earth, water, fire, air, eater, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together these eight comprise my separated material energies. But besides this inferior nature, Almighty Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mine, which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Thus both matter and the living entities are manifestations of energy of the Supreme Lord. Since the energy and the energetic are not different, and since the material energies are both energies of the Supreme Energetic, the Supreme Lord, ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead is everything. In this regard, the example may be given of gold that has not been molded, and gold that has been molded into various ornaments. A gold earring and the gold in a mine are different only as cause and effect, otherwise they are the same. The Vedanta Sutra describes that Brahman is the cause of everything, Janmadi Siddhartha. Everything is born of the Supreme Brahman, from which everything emanates as different energy. None of these energies, therefore, should be considered false. The Mayavadi's differentiation between Brahman and Maya is only due to ignorance. Purport continues over three more pages. That's a lot in one breath, so I'll just stop in and pick up the thread a little later. Om Agyanti Mrandasya Pilam Nasila Kesak Shivam Gita Minatas Nai Shikuri Vena Maha. So, just as yesterday we discussed Allen Ginsberg, who asked Srila Prabhupada about worshipping the Supreme Lord in the form of a deity, and how it was possible to capture spirit in matter, and that therefore many world religions are speaking out against deity worship and consider it idol worship and consider it to be rejected. In Corinthians, we were looking the other day, it says that anything that is offered, the food that has been offered to your idols, right? To whom is it offered? Is it offered to a non-entity? No, it is offered to demons, to Satan. So here we are, it's of the devil. What can be said? So the distinction is made between the Supreme Lord and his matter. We also have a very nice book which, what's that called again? It's Introducing Our Society, done by Satyavati, many pictures on it, and as an introduction to Vaishnavism, Hinduism, pictures, etc. Very famous. Huh?
The Hidden Glory of India.
Thank you so much. And you know what is in the Hidden Glories of India, in one of the earlier pages, the golden calf. The golden, there's a full picture of the golden calf being worshipped. Show that to any Christian relative, just to show what we are doing. I don't know why you put it there, it's very interesting. The golden calf was there. Oh well. But Prabhupada resolved the matter by basically saying, matter doesn't exist, it's all spirit. Everything is spiritual, everything is emanating from Krishna. Aham sarasya prabhavo matasaram pravartite iti matapatantimam buddhapavasam vitaha. All the material worlds and all the spiritual worlds are emanating from me, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. But then here we find the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who also makes the distinction. Earth, water, fire, air, eater, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are Krishna's separated energies. They're his energies, but they're separated from him. He stays aloof. Jagat avyakti murtina. In this universe, Krishna is there in his unmanifested form. In other words, it appears to go on its own without Krishna, and Krishna doesn't directly involve with these matters. Although everything goes on by his will, at the same time, Krishna is not directly managing the universal affairs. He's not managing it, making the sun rise and making the earth spin, or like Atlas, carrying the planet on his shoulders and keeping it in position. No, it is all going on by his will, simply, by his desire. He's not, it doesn't take any effort, simply because he so desires, it works. And then, it is a fact that everything is going on by laws. By laws, the material energy is working. And as our scientists are discovering, the laws by which the material energy is working, but not seeing who's behind the laws, the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the material energy is the separated energy of the Lord, whereas apareya mitastranyam prakitim vidime param, it is said that's the living entity. The living entity is of a different nature than that material energy. And the living entity, he is superior, of a superior nature. Because the living entity is of an eternal nature. Whereas matter is sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. That is the nature of matter. But spirit is always manifest. Therefore, natrevaham jatunasam natram neme natreva navarishyana sabivayamata param. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor all these kings. Never in the future will there be a time when we cease to be. So the soul is eternal. Najayate vriyate vakadachin, it neither takes birth nor it dies, it simply is eternally existing. Therefore there is sat and asat. Sat means that which is always existent, and asat means that which sometimes exists and sometimes doesn't exist. Or what comes into being, it goes through sat avikar, through six transformations. It comes into being, it grows or it develops, it comes to a flourishing state, it gives off some byproducts, it begins to dwindle, and finally ceases to exist. And these are the transformations that all matter is going through, but spirit is not going through. So in that way we make a distinction between matter and spirit. But matter is also spiritual in its origin. The conclusion of Lord Shiva here, he's speaking out against the impersonalist concept, which is Brahma Satya Jagat Mitya, or that the universe is real, sorry, that Brahman is real and the universe is false. However, when we speak about Maya, when we speak about the illusory energy, it doesn't mean that that energy is illusion. It means that that energy can bewilder the consciousness of the living being. It can put us into illusion, but not that the energy is illusion. Matter is very real. When there's a wall and it's made of bricks and you walk into it, it's hard. It's not false. It is there. It is very much a reality. But the material energy is the illusory energy, because it can bewilder us and can put us into illusion. After all, we are very intimately connected with the material energy in the sense that we are in a material body. And that is the problem. The bewildering effect of the material energy is that we take the body as the self. That's where the root cause of this illusory potency comes from, is that we take the body as the self. When we take the body as the self, then we think that all this matter, it becomes suddenly very important, because matter relates to the body in so many ways. It provides various forms of enjoyment for the body. Then, therefore, to accept the body as the self, janasya mohyam aham maneti, this bodily concept of life is actually the first effect of Maya. Well, that's what it is, but not that Maya in itself is false, as the impersonalist will say. Because the impersonalist logic is this, it's called vivartavad. And the vivartavad philosophy basically is this, is that, is there a rope or a snake? It's night. Here that may not be so relevant, but when you are in India, suddenly it becomes relevant. You walk on some path in the darkness and you see something on the path, and it really looks like a snake. Now, but intelligence says, no, it's just the rope. But the mind goes, well, really? Is it a rope or a snake? What is it? So the point that Sankaracharya makes with this metaphor, it is Sankaracharya who offers us this metaphor of the rope and the snakes. So he is the founder of the impersonalist interpretation of the Vedic literature. So Sankaracharya comes up with this because of logic. He says, you see, Brahman is absolute. Brahman is unchangeable. Brahman is sat. Brahman is eternal existence. Matter is asat. It is temporary in nature. So Brahman, which is the origin of everything, and simply everything we see, is that Brahman energy. Therefore, when we see Brahman in a temporary form, when we see energy that is temporary, it cannot be, because Brahman is eternal. Therefore, it must be false. Therefore, matter must be illusion. That is the logic behind Sankaracharya's reasoning. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu responds to it. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, Brahman, so basically, let's repeat one more time. Sankaracharya said, therefore, Brahman is unchangeable. It cannot change. So it cannot transform into matter. It looks like matter, but it's not. It looks like a snake, but it's still a rope. Simple as that. But no, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is pointing out, no, Brahman is an aspect of the Lord. The Advaya Jnana, or the undivided absolute truth, exists of Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti Sabjate. This, it exists in the Brahman, in Paramatma, in Bhagavan, right? Just like the sun, it exists in the form of the sun and the sun god and the sun rays. So sun god, sun disk, sun rays. It's all the sun. The sun shines into the room. You know, if the sun shines in the room, your room will be on fire. Right? Yeah? No, it's the sun rays that shine into the room. But we said it is the sun. It is the sun. Oh, yeah. I'm sitting in the sun. Really, are you sitting in the sun? Yeah. You must be cooking. You must be cooking. Yeah? How can you sit in the sun? Very nicely. Yes. Sitting in the sun rays. So the sun manifests in different ways, in the form of the sun disk, sun god who's behind, and sun rays. In the same way, the undivided absolute truth is manifest in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the form of Paramatma, and in the form of Brahman. And it says in the Isupanishad, Hiranmayena Patrena Sajasyupi Tanmukanta Tvanpusana Bhavyanu Satyadharmaya Drishyate. It says that this golden effulgence of mine, that it is my dazzling effulgence. This Brahman is my dazzling golden effulgence, and behind it is my true face. So this is the understanding that Brahman, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, is not the origin. Brahman is the energy of Bhagavan. It is the effulgence of Bhagavan. Hiranmaya, the golden effulgence of Bhagavan. And Bhagavan never changes. Shankaracharya is right. The Supreme Lord doesn't change. Krishna is Krishna. He'll always be Krishna. We see, Putana, Putana is my name. Killing children is my game. Yes, but... Oh, this child looks like he can destroy the entire universe. Rubbish. But he could, and more than that, because still the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is always Krishna. Krishna never changes. So Shankaracharya is right about that. But Brahman is the energy of the Lord. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Shakti Parinamavad. It begins with Shakti. Shakti refers to Brahman is the energy. It's not the Lord. So that's our argument against the Supreme Lord. It's the effulgence of the Lord. It's the Brahma Jyoti. Jyoti means light. The light emanating from the Supreme Lord. It's his energy. So, Shakti Parinamavat. Shakti. Parinam means result or one thing coming of another. So from this energy, yes, other things can emanate from Brahman. Thus, Brahman can transform. And Brahman can therefore take all kinds of forms. And yes, here we are, wood and stone and water, Bhumirupa Nalavaya, these eight separated energies, which are transformations of Brahman. So Shankaracharya will argue, Brahman cannot transform. And we argue back. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated this Vivartavat, this impersonalism. So that is very powerful, and it's like powerful reasoning, which is supported by scripture. I mean, I gave the verse from the Isupanishad, which establishes Brahman as the effulgence of the Lord. And that's Upanishad. You see, the Mayavadis, they give importance to the Upanishads, because Vedic scriptures are divided in two sections, Shruti and Smriti. The Shruti is what comes directly of the breath of the Lord, and the Smriti is what is, Shruti means what is heard, Smriti means what is remembered. So the Smriti, like the Puranas, Smriti is like what is remembered. Purana actually literally means the old, or the history, the transcendental history of the universe is basically here. And then Bhagavatam, the Amala Purana, the spotless, transcendental history of the universe. So whatever happened. So they won't accept the Puranas. They won't. Well, some comment on it, some don't. But then they argue, no, no. Only, of course, they will say no. Only the Sruti is Veda. Only the four Vedas and the Upanishads are part of those Vedas. Those we will accept. But not your Puranas. No, we will not accept. Not your Itihasas, your Ramayana and your Mahabharata. No, that's not Veda. That we do not accept. Of course, we argue back. And say, the Chandogya Upanishad, the Chandogya Upanishad, is said, establishes the fifth Veda and establishes exactly that these Puranas and Itihas are the Pancham Veda. So that is Chandogya Upanishad. That's right there in your Shruti. So your Shruti, which you accept as absolute and faultless, is recognizing that the Mahabharata, the Ramayana are also, and the Puranas are also Veda. And that means Mahabharata, that includes the Bhagavad Gita. And that means that the Bhagavad Gita is to be accepted as Veda. We may think so early and so early in the morning, all these arguments. But it is important, because we have to be able to defend our conviction, and we will encounter people who challenge us. My favorite example of that is that there is a Bhagavatam commentator known as Bhopadev. And then some have claimed that Bhopadev is the author of the Bhagavatam. So this is addressed in the first canto, in the first commentaries, where it is basically explained that the Bhagavatam is already mentioned in the Matsya Purana. It is described in detail that it has 18,000 verses, and some other details are given. So it is there. Therefore, it cannot be. In the Matsya Purana is an old Purana, therefore it cannot be that Bhopadev is the author. That's the arguments against it. So I read it, and I thought, well, interesting, but I'm never going to use this one, This one I'll never use in my preaching. Then I had to come by car from Vrindavan to Delhi, and we had a flat tire, and we stood there at the side of the road. Suddenly one man comes out of the bushes, and he says, he snaps at me, and he says, the Bhagavatam is written by Bhopadev. And I had just read it 3 days before, so I snapped back, Said, no, it's not, because it's mentioned about Matsya Purana. That's some more detail than I have now, because I just read it. And I rattled it off and left it there. So don't think we will not need these arguments. We need to be able to prove the Bhagavad Gita is bona fide. Chandogya Upanishad. Finished. That settles that. So much for the Mayavad conception. We see here that Lord Shiva, who is obviously an authority, the impersonalists are generally worshipping Lord Shiva. Why is it that the impersonalists are generally worshipping Lord Shiva? Well, the reason is that we see that depicted in the lingam. The lingam is representing the male impregnating aspect and the female aspect of prakriti, or the material energy that receives life of the male aspect. So this is a little more explained in both the Brahma Samhita and in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So in the Brahma Samhita we get the idea that there is Mahavishnu, and Mahavishnu, he is just on the edge of the material world. Right? He is on the causal ocean, the Viraja River, which is right between the material and the spiritual world. Viraja River and causal ocean are the same. And then, it is Mahavishnu who glances upon the potential of the material energy, which then is not yet manifest. This, when the material energy is manifest in potential, just like a seed contains the potential of a tree, but it's not manifest, the potential is there. So the potential of the material energy in its unmanifest state is called pradhana. Lord Mahavishnu glances upon that pradhana. The glance becomes Sadashiva, and who's an expansion of Mahavishnu, and Sadashiva is still Vishnu Tattva. Then that glance touches the pradhana, activates the modes of material nature, which were in an inactive state, they become active, and impregnates the material energy with the living entities. At that point, because Sadashiva comes in contact with the material energy, a transformation takes place. Yatada divikara visesa yogurt. Just like milk becomes transformed into yogurt by an external agent. Then it becomes Rudra. And then we get Lord Shiva, the demigod, right? The one that resides in Mount Kailash, the one that is worshipped. So, in this way, Shiva Tattva has two aspects, the demigod Shiva and the Sada Shiva, the spiritual aspect of Shiva. Said, as the demigod Shiva has his abode in Mount Kailash, on the material side of the Viraja River, on the spiritual side is the abode of Sada Shiva. So this sets the matter straight, the whole Shiva Tattva issue. Anyway, so the impersonalists are looking at Lord Shiva as the creative principle, that he is the one who impregnates matter. Through him it comes into being, and then he also destroys it. He's also acting as the destroyer. So he's the agent who brings this whole illusory energy into being, and the agent that also destroys that same illusory energy. So therefore the impersonalists are looking at like the Shiva Lingam as a symbol of how Maya is created and also how Maya is again destroyed. And what remains is Brahman. It is for that reason that they naturally turn to the worship of Lord Shiva. Therefore here Lord Shiva is speaking. You're worshipping Lord Shiva? Huh? Shiva, is it? You? You're Mayavadi, you're worshipping Lord Shiva. Here, Lord Shiva is speaking. He says that you are free from material contamination, and since the entire cosmos is caused by you and cannot exist without you, it is an effect of your transcendental qualities. Thus the conception that Brahman is true and the world false cannot be maintained. So that is you can remember in this Mohini Murti chapter in the 8th canto, this Lord Shiva is speaking as an authority. So this is interesting because, after all, they're worshipping Lord Shiva. And you're the one you worship is speaking, so you're in disagreement with Lord Shiva. So this is interesting. Alright, that was a whole explanation. Now we carry on with the paper. Srimad Veera Raghavacharya in his Bhagavad Chandra Chandrika describes the Vaishnava philosophy as follows. The cosmic manifestation is described as sat and asat, as chit and achit. Matter is achit and the living force is chit, but their origin is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in whom there is no difference between matter and spirit. So I spoke about sat and asat, or that which is eternal and that which is temporary. Then Viraga-acharya brings up the point of matter being, or of achit and chit. It means conscious. Matter is achit, it's not conscious. And chit means conscious. So the living entity is chit, is conscious, and matter is not conscious. So matter is therefore asat and achit. It is temporary and it has no consciousness. According to this conception, the cosmic manifestation consisting of both matter and spirit is not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Idam hi visvam bhagavan ivetaraha. This cosmic manifestation is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it appears different from him. In Bhagavad Gita 9.4, the Lord says, Maya tatam vidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhuttaina jamte savastita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Thus, although someone may say that the Supreme Person is different from the cosmic manifestation, actually he's not. The Lord says, Maya tatam vidam sarvam. In my impersonal feature, I am spread throughout the world. Therefore, this world is not different from him. The difference is a difference in names. So, everything is Krishna's energy. That is undoubtedly so. But we remember how Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta during the Second World War. And at that time, he was married. And Srila Prabhupada, as a child, used to have a nickname, which was Kachori Mukhi. Or you could say Kachori face, right? The one who loved Kachoris. He absolutely loved Kachoris. And that stayed with him throughout his whole life. He loved Kachoris. So during the Second World War, sometimes there was bombing in Calcutta. So people had blacked out their windows and taped it all up with paper, and so that no light would come out, etc., and everything dark. And Prabhupada was at home, I guess there was some door open or something like that, so he could look outside, he said, and there was a siren that went off, the alarm, the air raid alarm, when everyone was supposed to go down into a bomb shelter. Just then, his wife had cooked a fresh plate of hot kachoris and he had it under his nose. So he's saying, forget it. Yeah, I'm not going into the bomb shelter. I'm eating my kachoris. Right? So Prabhupada continued to eat his kachoris. He said, but then he saw the bombs falling. He saw the bombs and the destructive force. And he said, that's also Krishna. That's also Krishna. But that is Krishna's universal form. That is his destructive form. Right? That's not his lovable form. Right? That is not his lovable form. So a distinction is made. In the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the universal form that Arjuna wants to see, that is also a form of Krishna, but it's a very intense form of Krishna. Arjuna sees all these faces and all the heroes of the battle of Kurukshetra are being crunched between the teeth of that universal form as if they are potato chips. That's kind of a bit, what shall I say, you know, it's a bit intense chapter, really. When you go through Gita, that one is sort of a bit the heavy chapter. But that's also Krishna, and of course, Kalusvi, Lokaksaya Krit, time I am, destroyer of worlds, we see it under our eyes. So this destructive aspect of the universal form, sometimes people don't like it. The devotees did a Bhagavad Gita play, and they also did the universal form, and then some Christian priest in a newspaper response just pointed out how ghastly it is, this Bhagavad Gita. But not understanding that it is the world. It's not the Bhagavad Gita that is destructive. It's not chapter 11 that is destructive. It is September 11 that was destructive when the trade towers went down, right under our eyes. Somehow or other, there happened to be cameras on the building, lo and behold. And somehow or other, we could all see it. I was in Zurich, in the temple, and suddenly there was a hidden panel in the wall, which I didn't know, and there was a television. And before you knew it, we were watching it, a replay, again and again, and the towers went down, and they went down again, and down again they went. Good exposure. Well, what can be said? We saw it with our own eyes, the destructive force of the material energy. Oppenheimer, who was part of the team that invented the nuclear bomb, was present when they were testing the nuclear bomb. And Oppenheimer then was quoting the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the destroying factor of the universal form. So that is there. But Prabhupada made it so simple. That is not the lovable form of the Lord. Yes, so it is all water. Krishna, I am the taste in water. Very nice. But we don't want water, we want Krishna. We want Krishna directly in his original form, because that is his lovable form. So we make a distinction. Yes. So here in this chapter we are looking at the all-pervading aspect of the Lord, and we appreciate that. But then once we're finished with that, once we've established, yes, Krishna is the source of everything, yes, Krishna is the controller of everything, and yes, Krishna is aloof, then we want to go to Vrindavan and say, yes, and he's a cowherd boy. And that is just the most amazing feature of the Supreme Lord, because in that feature he is most lovable, most accessible, most intimate. Therefore, that form of Krishna we want. And all the other energies, yes. Yes, the gopis said, as Krishna had disappeared from the rasa dance, the gopis were everywhere looking for Krishna. Couldn't find him. Then they saw Lord Narayan in his forenoun form. They offered obeisances and said, my dear Lord Narayan, please accept our most humble obeisances. You are the Supreme Personality of God. Have you seen Krishna? That was very interesting. Their interest is Krishna. Only Krishna. Kichit kevalai bhaktya vasudev parayana. That is our business. Only Vasudev, only Krishna. No one else. No one. So that is interesting. There is more in the purport, but I'm leaving it for long, as they say, which means for later on. Leaving things for long means it's Australia. Leaving things for the evening, not often, is it? In Australia, it's leaving for long, means for later. Isn't that right? That's right, eh?
The Brits also say that.
The Brits also say that. Poms say it as well. wrong. It's nice. I like it. So we leave the rest for long. Yeah, no questions or comments.
You mentioned about this principle, sat and asat, conscious and unconscious.
No, chit and achit was conscious and unconscious. Sat and asat was temporary and eternal.
Eternal, yeah.
Eternal, temporary.
We know matter, its origin is spirit.
Yes.
How this transformation takes place from sat to asat, from conscious to unconscious.
Okay, chit to achit, conscious to unconscious, sat to asat, from eternal to temporary. How this transformation takes place? It doesn't. It's not that it transforms, because actually the material world is also eternal. It's eternal. So Krishna is always manifest in both these features, temporary and eternal. It's not that the material world is at one point created. It sometimes manifests, sometimes not manifests. But actually, Srila Prabhupada explains that the material world is actually also part of the spiritual world. But part of the entire domain of the spiritual world becomes covered as if by a cloud, just like a little cloud covers only a little corner of a little portion of the sky. So a little portion of the spiritual sky is covered by the cloud of illusory energy, so that the living being can find himself in a little corner where he can think, here Krishna is not present, here he is not the Lord. So that is what the illusory yogamaya energy of Krishna provides, a little corner of the spiritual world where it just looks that he's not there. There is no God. He's not here. He's not. I've looked everywhere. I don't see him anywhere. Prabhupada, where is your God? Everywhere, Father. Is he here? Is he there? Everywhere, Father. Then he's in this pillar. Yes, he's in this pillar. like that. So that's all it is. We are. Sometimes the question comes, did the jiva fall? And how did we fall? And then the answer is, we didn't fall. We didn't fall at all. We never fell from the spiritual sky. No, we didn't. We're still there. We're still there. We just forgot. And if we remember that we're there, then we're there. Just not that it's a long, long way to the spiritual world. It's a long, long way to the spiritual world. And it's not, that's not the song. It's not that we are going to make the long, long journey to the spiritual world. Or is it far? No, we're here. It's just a matter of remembering. So, whatever the illusory energy makes it appear. So, he said, Brahmana Pratistaham, that first of all, everything in this material world rests on Brahman. That's the energy. Look the wind, look the light, you know. Look, see all these molecules shooting around, and within matter. I mean, so they say, right? It's not just sitting still, molecules are moving like energy, all that energy going on. So, what is all that energy? That is the energy of Brahman. And then Bhagavad Gita points out, Brahmana Pratistham, and Brahman rests on Krishna. So in this way, it's all going on. So matter, as we know, manifests for some time, and then what is this called in English? The law of preservation of energy or something like that? Is that how you call it?
Conservation
of energy, yeah.
Energy can neither be created nor destroyed.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it just transforms. You know? It's like the molecules in your body some are falling out. You realize that you drop some molecules. and then it's time for breakfast. And a serious amount of molecules is going to go in. Yeah? Don't take too many molecules in this morning. Because if you for a long time take too many molecules, then they become part of your body. You know what I mean? And you can say, this person has too many molecules. But the point is, and then some molecules, they leave your body via the back door. But they don't disappear. Yeah? They don't disappear. They're still there. It's transformed. So this is the nature of the energy. It transforms.
She made this point that the business of the Shruti and the Smriti and how our opponents in the other camp, they won't accept the Smriti. It's interesting, in many places when Prabhupada wants to establish a point beyond question, he'll quote from the Upanishads, the Svetashvatara Upanishad.
Yeah. That's actually a practice of the Acharyas, and Prabhupada follows exactly in line with all the Acharyas. See, Jiva Goswami, when he makes our case, the case for Vaishnavism, he makes that in the Sandarbhas. And the first Sandarbha is just to establish that the fifth Veda, basically. That's the Tattva Sandarbha, is just establishing this point, that the fifth Veda. So it's establishing Bhagavatam is fifth Veda. Then the rest is, okay, now Bhagavatam is our evidence. All right, let's get into it. And then he takes Bhagavatam and just starts using it as a club. You know, bang, 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 bang. Yeah? But the first of the six books, the first book just establishes this book here, the Bhagavatam, yes, is Vedic evidence. It's absolute. Yeah? And he establishes it really clear with that quote from Chandogya Upanishad and other quotes. But always going to the Shruti. So no one can argue with it. And then we come back with the Smriti.
Actually, I remember one time in England, Srila Ramaswamy was giving a discourse on the different Vedas. And in the evening, he walked into the discourse and he said, okay. He said, I don't accept the Smriti. He said, to somebody defeat me. I don't accept any Smriti. Somebody defeat me. And the others really struggling, actually.
Mm.
Until Ajahn came and he quoted this verse.
Yeah. From the that's the one. And then the interesting part is this. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is Gopal Kumar is slowly traveling up to different lokas, different planets, and he's on his way to the spiritual world. At one point, he's Lord Brahma. And when Gopal Kumar is Lord Brahma, then one day there is a big gathering of the Vedas personified. And they're all there, and it's like a big discussion. And, you know, and the Upanishads, they are very loud. They're very loud, and they're dominating. They're dominating.
The whole situation.
It's one of those mics. Don't touch mics. Anyway, so it's a... the Upanishads dominate the whole situation. And but some confidential Upanishads, like the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, is not satisfied at all. The Puranas are really not like very very happy, and some Agamas, some other scriptures also are not very happy. So the Upanishads are establishing that Brahman is the ultimate, but then the confidential Upanishads and the Puranas and the Agamas, they walk out of the assembly. You know, and that's a bit of a shock, right? So then everyone goes, no, oh God, whatever. So they go after them, please come back, have they offended you? Oh no, I mean, please don't leave. So then they come back, and then they're allowed to speak. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam establishes knowledge, very confidential knowledge, which is supported by the Gopal Tapani Upanishad and other such scriptures, beyond a doubt, that Krishna is the origin of Brahman, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the topmost manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's how it is. So the conclusions of the fifth Veda is actually the topmost. As Bhagavatam says, Nikama Kalpatara Galitam Falam Sukumukat and Dittadrava Samitam Pivata Bhagavatam Vasamana Yamura. It is the cream of all Vedic knowledge. And that's the other thing. It's not just, well, it's also Veda. You know, it's the cream of the Veda. So that's why this fifth Veda must be accepted. It's not only that we want to make the point, yes, the Upanishads is okay. No, it's not enough, the Upanishads. You're missing out on the cream. The Bhagavatam is the cream, the essence of all Vedic literatures. Nikama Kalpatara Kavitam Phalam. that point.
So there's a point there about that we should know how to actually establish
the
Bhaktas for
our own thank you.
I was just wondering, what is the relationship between Brahman and the internal energy of the Lord? Is it the same thing or different one?
The internal energy of the Lord is Antaranga Shakti, is known to consist of three subdivided Shaktis, the Ladini Shakti, the Samvit Shakti, and the Sandini Shakti. The Ladini Shakti is the pleasure potency, the Sandini is the existence potency, all existence rests on that, and then the Samvit is the knowledge potency. So then, spirit exists in various forms. Anything above the Viraja River is part of that spiritual realm. That means Goloka Vrindavan, that means Mathura, that means on the petals of Goloka, on the very edge, Ayodhya, that means then the Vaikuntha Lokas, and that means the Brahmajyoti effulgence, which makes up the spiritual sky, and then separated by the Viraja, the material world. So Brahman is simply the Brahmajyoti, the light of the spiritual sky, in which you find Vaikuntha planets, in which you find Ayodhya Dham, Mathura Dham, and Goloka Dham. So like that, Brahman is part of it, but it's not the same as the internal energy. Internal energy is bigger and broader. Brahman is just one aspect in it of the Antaranga Shakti.